What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Love That Lasts podcast. This is Jeff, and this week on the Anatomy of Marriage miniseries, we have a total treat. If you're a fan of Ask Science Mike, then you are going to love this episode. Melanie actually sat down with Mike and a bunch of other amazing people to talk about the way that our brains actually influence our relationships. We know you guys are going to love it.
This episode of the Love That Lasts podcast is brought to you by Datebox, the monthly subscription that helps grow your relationship. Every month, you get a box that's packed with everything needed for a fun, creative, and unique date night, and it's delivered right to your door. You don't even have to think about it. You don't have to make reservations. Visit getdatebox.com and use the promo code LOVETHATLAST at the checkout to get your free box. Datebox, your relationship matters.
Today, we'll be talking all about the science of love and how our brains play a much bigger role in our marriages than one might think. And to start it all off is my new best friend, Dr. Dan Siegel. And here's why I call him my new best friend.
I had a list of questions for you, but would you prefer to kind of...
You can do whatever you want, Melanie.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to be honest with you right up front. This entire episode is going to feel like we're getting clinical. There are so many chemical names and clinical concepts, but I promise you right now that it is totally worth hanging in there, even if you feel a little bit confused at times. Okay? Okay. Are you sure you're good? Okay, you're good. Okay. I'll let Dr. Siegel talk now.
What exactly is interpersonal neurobiology?
Well, interpersonal neurobiology is a phrase for a field where we combine all the different fields of science, everything from anthropology and sociology down to physics and mathematics, all into one framework. So we look at issues about what the mind is, how relationships work, what well-being is, and we try to see from the lens of what's called consilience, that is, finding the common ground across these independent disciplines so we can deeply understand how to improve our lives.
What made you want to do this?
You know, for me, I was trained originally in biochemistry in college, but worked on a suicide prevention service. And that kind of, I think, spectrum of what reality was like, everything from enzymes and how they allowed salmon to survive, actually the salmon you have in Seattle, all the way to how a communication between one person on a phone line and another could keep the person in a suicidal crisis alive, taught me that, in fact, the process of connecting was deeply at the heart of health, whether it was enzymes connecting with different molecules or human beings connecting with each other. So that set me kind of on a journey to ask the question, what is reality all about? What is the mind? And so I went from pediatrics to psychiatry to research psychiatry and ultimately helped found this field called interpersonal neurobiology, this field where we combine all the disciplines of science together into one.
What is emotional intelligence and how does emotional intelligence apply to marriage?
Okay. So the phrase emotional intelligence comes from the work of some people out of Yale. It was made popular in a wonderful way by the writer and psychologist Daniel Goleman. And basically, emotional intelligence involves the capacity for self-awareness, self-regulation, mediating the difficulties between self and other, and then also working out how you understand emotions impact the lives of other people.
So that was our introduction of sorts to this episode, with a little smattering of emotional intelligence and interpersonal neurobiology to get us started. Now, we're actually going to break this episode up into different acts. Act 1 is falling in love. Act 2 is forming bonds. Act 3 is, crap, something just went wrong. And Act 4 is long-term nurturing of our relationships. Again, just like in other episodes, there will be overlapping of ideas, and sometimes you'll be like, why are we talking about this? But it will all come back around in the end. So to get us started in Act 1 is Dr. Corey Allen. I first learned about him when I was Googling how to have a simple marriage, and I found his site, simplemarriage.net, along with his amazing podcast, Sexy Marriage Radio. I've been a binge listener ever since. I'll let Dr. Corey take it from here.
So tell me a little bit about yourself.
The informal, I'm Corey Allen. The formal, I'm Dr. Corey Allen. I'm a marriage family therapist, licensed professional counselor, have a private practice here in the Dallas suburbs area.
So to kick things off, I asked Dr. Corey a few personal questions about the early months of my relationship with Seth. Specifically, why didn't I learn anything from my premarital counseling sessions at our church, even though I read great marriage books by great authors?
I've been thinking about this a lot because we did premarital counseling. I interviewed Les and Leslie Parrott, and I sat there in this interview going, why didn't I like learn any of the things that I read in their book like years ago, you know?
And right. Well, some of it is the chemical high that you're on when you first meet and fall in love. So if that's something going on, it's rose-colored glasses and idealistic distortions, you know, then our love will see us through everything.
My husband and I dated for 5 months and got married 3 months after that.
So then you're right in it because that chemical lasts 6 months to 2 years is what research has found. And I mean, that's when I'm speaking, I use that phrase of, that's roughly long enough to date, fall in love, get engaged, get married, and come home from the honeymoon. And that's when you wake up one day shortly thereafter and go, who are you and what are you doing in my bed? You know, just because you finally get a new view and you realize, dude, you can't even find a hamper with clothes. What is that?
I wonder what this crazy chemical is.
It's actually called phenylethylamine. It's produced in the amygdala of the brain. And again, this is something that's only been discovered in the 8-10 year range recent. I think they've known it's existed, but they didn't really know how and why. And it literally floods your brain and it gets you that euphoric feeling. It's a chemically induced high. So it's the same chemical composition that can be found in cocaine. There's trace elements of similar compounds in it. And so it gives you that obsessive longing high, and then it fades and it can't be reproduced in the same relationship. You can't have new love with someone you've already loved.
Now for Dr. Siegel's turn. He and I talked more about those crazy love chemicals.
And the chemical that's very active in falling in love is dopamine. And dopamine is very much a part of the reward circuit of the brain. So when you think about your person you're in love with, when you're near them, when you take a big smell of their dirty t-shirt, all these different things, you know, you get a hit of dopamine, which tells your brain, this is good. And so in many ways, as you probably know, the dopamine neurotransmitter is the same transmitter for addiction. And that kind of falling in love, that romantic love, if you want to call it that way, is very much parallel to becoming addicted to somebody. Then there's erotic love, which is sexual attraction. And there you have the androgens. These are the sexual hormones. And the idea of just physical appearance is part of it, but it's also probably a chemical matching that you are attracted to people whose immune system is complementary to yours. Then there's attachment love, which is very much related to a number of things. Some people like to talk about oxytocin for bonding. Other people talk about serotonin. And the idea of the attachment system is that it is all about friendship. Ideally, you have all three. You have your attachment love, you have your erotic love, and you have your romantic love.
Now on to Act Two, forming bonds. Here's Dr. Corey Allen again.
You can't have new love with someone you've already loved, but you can have deeper love. And that's the oxytocin that comes along. They call that the love bond chemical. It's one of the phrases I've heard, that's a deeper connection. And where oxytocin is produced most is when you go through major struggle and tragedy together or orgasm. Huh. And so it's kind of fascinating that you got both dichotomies there. But if you stick it out, that's what gets you that longer, that deeper bond where you truly then, biblically speaking, know each other and are known.
So is that, this is going to sound really weird, but that first chemical that you mentioned that I won't even try to say.
Phenylethylamine.
So my husband and I, 2 years ago, went on a trip to Europe without our children. Like, it's not something we would normally do. Uh-huh. And that experience, I feel like it was a second honeymoon. Like, it was, every single thing was new.
Sure.
We were experiencing new languages, new places, new foods. Do you think that that would have that same...
There's probably some compounds in it, and I'm not a brain scientist, so that's not my schooling. But there's probably some compounds in that, but that's also going to be adrenaline and the adventure side of things, the novelty side of things. It would be a major component of that because you're doing something new, something novel together. So it's a shared experience that you get a chance to create meaning together, which would have a bonding element to it because it's a shared story and it's all new. And so it's also one where you kind of probably have moments of feeling isolated and alone, only each other, in this whole new world that you have no clue. So you turn to each other differently like you would have before. So it would be a lot of different components, I think, that would make it feel pretty similar. I don't know if it's actually the same chemical, but there's definite elements, it sounds like. So well done.
Oxytocin, which has to do with the pleasure chemical in the brain.
Throwing it back to Dr. Claudia Graf Grounds again.
Mm-hmm. Which happens with orgasm, which happens with feeling safe and secure in a relationship, which has to do with nursing babies, which has to do with kind of coming to a place where you're held well, however that is. Those are pleasure chemicals that are really introduced in the brain. And so those can be nurtured too. Those aren't things that are just kind of... You're just waiting for them to happen. You can actually attend and pay attention to that.
Claudia, don't give the last act away. We'll talk about nurturing later.
Long-term committed relationships are different from just cohabitating. There is something in the research that suggests that people cohabitate don't have the same health benefits as people who have a committed relationship. So there's something about not just being together, but actually saying I'm committed to you, that seems to confer a lot of health benefits. It's all about these four S's, if you will. One, you want to be seen by your partner so that they see the mind beneath behavior, have mind sight for you, basically. Not just see what your body's doing, but actually see your feelings and thoughts and hopes and dreams. You want to be soothed by them. So when you're in a state of distress, interacting with your partner calms you down, or even talking to your partner on the phone or thinking about your partner helps soothe you. So seen, soothed. The third S is safe. So your partner can protect you from inner and outer harm and also not be the source of terror for you. And then the fourth S is being secure. So you have a deep sense of security in this attachment kind of bond.
Wait. So I want to pause here for a second and talk about something that he just said.
So that they see the mind beneath behavior, have mind sight for you, basically.
This idea of mind sight is so beautiful to me and has really changed the way that I think about a lot of my interactions, both in my marriage and in my family. And I want to talk about it bad, but we need to hear a word from our sponsors.
What's up, guys? Jeff here. I want to let you guys know about something awesome we are doing, and that is we are giving away our audiobook of Love That Lasts totally free. Not joking. We actually partnered with Audible, and here's what you do. Go to jeffandalyssa.com/freelisten, freelisten. And what that's going to do is that's going to take you to our special Audible page. And actually, you can download any audiobook free. You get your first one free with that link. But if you just search our names, Beth Key or Love That Lasts, you can get ours especially free. I don't know there's such thing as especially free, but you guys know what I mean. So basically, you get one free audiobook if you go to that link. And the cool part about Audible is you can sign up for it, log in with Amazon to make it really easy to get your free audiobook. And then if you just don't want to stay signed up, you can cancel immediately after signing up, and they let you keep whatever book you downloaded totally free, which is an incredible part of their service. So the Love That Lasts audiobook was read by Alyssa and me. We read it over 4 days. It's our stories. The chapters alternate, and it's really fun, I think, hearing it in our voices with us going back and forth. So again, jeffandalyssa.com/freelisten, and you get your audiobook free, and you can cancel or stay with it, and it stays in your Audible app forever. So all right, love you guys.
Dan Goleman, who wrote the foreword to a book I wrote called Mindsight, said that mindsight is the mechanism beneath emotional intelligence and even social intelligence. And what mindsight is the ability to sense our internal subjective experience, including our emotions. So MindSight, the word means basically awareness called insight, empathy or the awareness of another's inner world, making a MindSight map of you or a MindSight map of me, but also realizing we are interconnected to each other. There's the relational piece and something called integration where we honor differences and promote linkages. So for me, emotional intelligence is an important and learnable skill that's built on MindSight abilities that can be taught and that promote insight, empathy, and this thing called integration, this honoring of differences, promoting of linkages.
Okay, so is anyone else's mind slightly blown? Honoring differences and promoting of linkages? Truly, that is so hard for me to wrap my head around because he is saying that as couples, we should honor this type of stuff. Seth, you should have closed Hattie's blinds.
Right.
Seth, yeah, you should have put the shoes here. Why are they in here?
She thinks it's absolutely right and wrong. Everything's black and white or almost right and wrong.
So I'm sort of pushing this idea a bit here, but in episode 3, we talked about differences. And those last two clips are pretty fair examples of how our differences present themselves within our marriage. I mean, I don't know about you, but I don't do a whole lot of honoring of differences, I guess. And you might be all like, Melanie, Dr. Siegel talked about this idea in a different episode. But in response to that, I'm all like, I know. And it still blows my mind. So let's hear more of that sweet, sweet brain talk, shall we?
I wrote a book called The Developing Mind, which kind of describes the science of MindSight, if you will, and why research was finding that the ability to sense the mind, what I call MindSight, other people might call reflective function or theory of mind, all sorts of phrases in science. But when you have MindSight, you actually have better relationships with your spouse, better relationships with your kids, and even better relationships with yourself. So it's a win-win-win situation.
And there's the gold I was looking for. Say it one more time, doctor.
When you have MindSight, you actually have better relationships with your spouse, better relationships with your kids, and even better relationships with yourself. So it's a win-win-win situation. Win-win-win situation. Win-win-win situation.
Act 3. Crap, something just went wrong. I had the privilege to interview Science Mike, and no, that is not his real name.
My name is Mike McCarg. On the internet, people call me Science Mike. And I help people reconcile their spiritual experiences with modern science.
He and I talked about some of this stuff together, and I feel like he has the perfect anecdote to summarize this idea.
Well, I think one example with a really common story that happens in marriages might help illustrate the whole point. So two people get in a relationship, and it is so electric and dynamic and passionate and exciting. And half the people or more listening right now know where this story is going, right? But I'm gonna lay it out because we'll tell it once and then we'll tell it with brain science. So, in love, can't wait to see each other. Every touch is exciting. Every moment shared together is new and invigorating, and they like each other so much. They decide to get married, to spend all their time together, to commit to each other.
I do.
Which sounds very, very, very exciting beforehand, and a year in seems like a totally different idea. And but you know, they were friends and lovers, and now they're married. They've been married for a while, and it's still good. And so they're talking about going on vacation. And he wants to go to New York, and she wants to go to Paris. And it's not a big deal, but as they talk, they say things that kind of are off-putting and confusing and things they didn't expect the other one to say. And so they withdraw from the conversation, and each internally thinks, what went wrong? So they decide to go to Disney World and not New York or Paris as a compromise. And neither has that much fun. Not only that, at Disney World, they fight a lot. And as weeks and months go by, they actually start having more and more bickering. And they both love each other, but they can't figure out what's going wrong. They go to therapy some. And then therapy doesn't work. And one day... he wakes up and says, I just don't love her anymore. And they have a big fight, and he says that. And she says, I don't love you either. What are we doing? So how did two people go from point A to point B? Well, early in the relationship, there were a tremendous amount of neurotransmitters and hormones coursing through their bodies to create a pair bond. And humans are naturally oriented towards pair bonding. And they formed a pair bond. Biology did what biology does. And when you are in a pair bond with another human being, your brain's pleasure centers kind of go off whenever you think of that person and when you're in that person's presence. It's a self-reinforcing phenomenon. And over time, we know that the chemical mix and the mix of neurotransmitters will get less intense in a stable relationship. But the innate pleasure and satisfaction from the other person's presence remains. Passion may turn to affection, but either are really, really positive emotional experiences. But it is impossible for human beings to share space and not get into conflict, right? Because we have our own dreams, our own wishes, our own desires, our own view of the world. And the more you get to know someone, the more likely you are to find something about them that drives you crazy or is opposed to how you view the world. And when that happens, human brains constantly build a model of their reality. And the most energy your brain spends in creating a model is the people closest to you. And part of your brain called the orbitofrontal cortex makes predictions about the future, and it really doesn't like it when you're wrong. You get a little bit of anxiety when your predictions are wrong. So when you think you know a person and they say something you don't expect them to say, that can actually put your brain into a stress state. You can start having cortisol in your bloodstream, and if it's shocking enough, you can even have adrenaline. You can start a basic flight or fight response. Well, now you're introducing a little anger, a little amygdala activity into that relationship dynamic, and you walk away and you think of your partner. And as you think of your partner, your brain goes into a particular state that we can scan on a brain scanner. And now your amygdala is activated instead of just your anterior cingulate cortex, which is responsible for compassion and empathy, and some scientists would say love. And you're reforming your brain's image. Well, you don't want to feel angry about your spouse, so you start to analyze and question and think and rationalize what's happening. And when you do that, you shift the activity in the brain towards something called the prefrontal cortex. That's the brain's analytical centers. That's the accountant spreadsheet of your mind, and it really doesn't have feeling. And when we're confused, most of us tend to go into this thinking, questioning, analyzing state. Well, the more you do that while thinking about your spouse, the more you change this person in your mind, this model, from an emotional lived experience towards an idea. And we are not passionate about ideas in general, right? So what happens is then, if you were to brain scan someone towards the midpoint of the relationship and you say the person's name, you'd see a little response in the amygdala. That means the relationship's in trouble. If you scan the person's brain and you were to see mainly activity in the prefrontal cortex, that person's just become a word to them. And so what happened is we went from a whole brain, highly charged pair bonding experience towards a less pleasant fear anger response associated with the person, and ultimately a complete emotional detachment, at which point most marriages are over. Now, what can brain science tell us about how to rectify a problem like that? Well, if you want to be committed to a person, if you want to keep them in your life, it is important to try to identify and work out these points of conflict and difference. But you can't shift a relationship to an entirely analytical context. You'll change your brain's understanding of that person to just an idea. Even when times are difficult, it's important to maintain and execute pair bonding rituals. Whatever you can do. Now, if people are in really dire straits, some physical intimacy may just be too hard. That's fine, but you can light a couple candles and sit at a table and just talk about something other than the problem. You can go on a walk together. You can reminisce about times in the relationship that were positive. We would also understand that statistically, for example, marriages where the partners are extremely happy or satisfied with the relationship have 5 positive interactions for every 1 negative interaction, whereas relationships that end in divorce have 0.8 positive interactions for every 1 negative interaction. You can start counting literally
1, 2, 3, 4, 5
how these interactions feel, which will give you some understanding of the status of your relationship, and then you can hack it. You can just on purpose create positive experiences for your spouse. So what we're seeing here is marriage and family therapy has done a great job diagnosing the problem of a car just by listening to it, but brain science lets us pop the hood. Brain science lets us look into the seat where relationships happen in the human brain, and therefore let us optimize better strategies for creating the desired outcome.
Act 4, long-term nurturing of our relationships. And now finally, Claudia gets to tell you what she knows about how to nurture good chemical bonds in our relationships. This is where I cut her off earlier.
Those are pleasure chemicals that are really introduced in the brain. And so those can be nurtured too. Those aren't things that are just kind of, you're just waiting for them to happen. You can actually attend and pay attention to that. There's some practices, for example, for people to have conversations of disagreement holding hands, and they do better than when they don't. Mm-hmm. So some of those practices of intentional connection are going to help our biology and our neurochemistry to cooperate with what we're wanting to do.
Here are a few more marriage hacks.
Another example is actually music. Music ties the right and the left hemispheres of our brain more than just about anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does.
So trying to find a piece of music that you love and enjoy and share it with your partner and listen to that together and kind of making that mutual to listen to it. Mm-hmm. The other thing to do, if you're into pictures, pictures are very meaningful for people. If you have old digital pictures that you can show each other or albums, you know, if you're old school, to look at together and kind of remember or recall together moments of history. Again, we don't have a culture that really celebrates history very well. We kind of live in the present and the future. And so we don't have ways of hooking into history. And healthy cultures and healthy families have a good respect for history and repeating traditions and rituals that are meaningful and sharing them again and again and talking about why they're important.
Claudia also talks about the importance of hacking your marriage with your friends and making sure that your friends actually want your marriage to succeed and aren't always like putting your partner down.
Having other people, so if you need to vent separately from your spouse about something, if you can vent to somebody who's hearing you well, but also encourages you and pushes you back to say, you know, that part, say that back to your wife. Say that back to your husband. You want to be around people that are in that support.
Dr. Siegel has some thoughts about nurturing your marriage too.
It's the idea that nothing sort of happens spontaneously, just naturally, and stays that way for year after year after decade after decade. And when I think about my own experience with my marriage, which is now going to 30 years, it's absolutely an intentional cultivation of a garden. And you don't take it for granted. You don't let things overgrow or ignore them or don't water them or don't give them the right nutrients. But gardening these, nurturing them over time is an art form. You know, it's a very powerful way of realizing that being intentional can make for a wonderful life together.
Our show is produced by Matt Carter, editing and sound design.
So I was basically finished with this entire episode, and I asked Seth to sit down and listen to it with me because he hadn't really heard it yet. And then I thought, hey, maybe we can talk about some of our own chemicals because I feel like they're a little bit different than normal people since we didn't date like normal people. But the conversation that followed was so bizarre, I could not leave it out. Enjoy.
Is it okay that we talk about this?
Yes.
Okay.
Go ahead. Why are you laughing?
You just like putting the mic back and forth in people's faces.
Maybe.
I don't know. It's hard to explain. I see it now as like our love and relationship is much more deep, like you've said it before, like still waters run deep, you know? And I think with before and other relationships, it was less substance to it, I guess. Maybe those were just less substance and more just kind of like carefree fun. This person is super fun. But I've always felt guilty about it. Like, is there something wrong with me? Should I not have... I was condemning myself for not feeling those chemicals, like when you and I were dating and stuff, and like even in a couple of years post our marriage.
What?
Okay. Are you really not understanding me, or am I just not making sense, or are you being silly?
Are you saying that you don't have emotions and feelings for me? What are you saying?
No, I am not saying that. This is what I'm saying. After listening to the podcast, I'm saying, okay, in that kind of like pre-marriage state or those really young, you know, days and months or years even in a dating relationship where you're just like on cloud nine, you're like oxytocin, it's like your brain is high the whole entire time. I felt that with a previous person that I dated and then felt guilty and was questioning myself, like, what is this when I started dating you? Because like we did argue a lot, but something kept me there. Like that depth and that richness kept me in the relationship. Does that make sense now?
This marriage is a farce.
Okay.
I mean, it sounds terrible. I did not have the same experience. I was saying when I wanted to record this conversation that I think we set ourselves up weirdly, chemically speaking, because we were separated for so much of our dating experience. The week we started dating, you went on tour. Or no, you went to record the album. Literally like the day we started dating. And then you were gone. And then you started touring. And so we were never together. And we only dated for 5 months. And then got married 3 months after the five. So 8 months total. But we were very much apart those 8 months. So I'm saying chemically, we set ourselves up for a weird cycle.
Yes, I totally agree with you. We did set ourselves up weird because I was gone all the time. You were working, you were in school.
But you're telling me you aren't even in love with me.
No, I'm not telling you that. I'm saying in my own kind of attempt to explain, I was thinking like, oh gosh, this wasn't like other people that I dated before.
Is that why you eat so much ice cream?
Oh my gosh.
You're just trying to get the chemical high that I don't give you? He just mouthed to me to be serious. I am being serious. Whose podcast is this anyway?
Wow, what a crazy episode, you guys. I hope you enjoyed it. Who knew that our brains and chemicals played such an important role in our marriages and relationships? Next week, Alyssa and I will be back at our kitchen table talking about faith, life, and answering your questions.
Our show is produced by Matt Carter, edited and sound designed by Melanie Studley. Special thanks to executive producer Craig Gross and StrongerMarriages.com.
Love you guys and see you next week.